Hey, this is Ryan here. Just wanted to pop in before our discussion of Sense8 started, just to let you know and remind everybody that we have a Patreon. This episode came out, actually, all the way back in early days of 2021 in our ongoing series, Our Thoughts On, in which we give our thoughts on a piece of media. It's one of the many pieces of content we make over on our Patreon. So if you have the financial means or you're at all interested, come on over. We have a whole plethora of things over there, as well as a group Discord for you to be a part of. So remember, check us out on Patreon at Yum Yum Podcast. Well, enough jabbering from me. Please enjoy our discussion of Sense8.
Hello, Rachel.
Hi, Ryan.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I'm excited. We're here on our Patreon talking about something, giving our thoughts on. I think that's the show title. That's the idea. The idea is us with thoughts on something.
Yes.
So
thinking?
What's that? I don't know. We'll have to delineate it with seven other people. So, Rachel, what are we talking about for this one?
My favorite show.
What are we giving our thoughts on this time
around?
I thought
you already knew, Ryan.
I know, but do you know?
I know, and we both know because we're connected.
We're connected. Yes. So, you say the title of the show, and I'll go, that's correct.
Today, we are here to discuss Sense8.
The TV series, Correctamundo. Yes. And I guess there's a TV movie to end it all off on.
Aired from 2015 to 2018.
Wow, really? I guess I didn't realize it went that long, I guess. I guess it took him a little while to get the movie done, so... That is that. So obviously, we're giving our thoughts on, we've watched this show, it's on Netflix, if you have not watched it, we recommend. It's relatively short as well, I can't remember how many episodes a season there are, I think it's the usual, either anywhere between 8 and 14, which is the modern...
12 in season 1.
Yep. And season 2.
And then season 2 has 12.
And then the movie. So, Sense8, we will give our thoughts on it. So, it is a show that Netflix made. I remember this being one of the first Netflix shows. Or one of the first big ones. Like, this has a budget. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
There was Orange is New Black.
Throwing
this.
Their weight behind it.
Yeah, there was... There was stuff like Orange is the New Black and Bloodline that came out, but this was one where it's like, oh, we've got big names, we've got the Wachowskis, we've got a budget, we've got this show set in multiple locations, it's got action, it's a sci-fi. It was like they put out all the bells and whistles for this show in terms of the actual making of it, but to get into my history with this... Netflix, in my realm of the world, did not... do a great job marketing this show at all. I remember knowing about it more so when the second season had started, more so than when the first season aired. I remember getting ads for the second one and going, oh, what's this? I don't know what this is. I've got other things to do. And I remember the marketing for it just kind of being more focused on the action aspect of the show. Like, I thought it was one of those, this is a sci-fi action show. And unfortunately... I'm not a big fan of the Wachowskis, their films at least. The Matrix has never been for me. Bound was not for me either. Jupiter Ascending is a joke. So
I didn't think I've watched much of their stuff.
So the idea of the Wachowskis have a television show in which it's a bunch of people doing fight scenes did not sell me on it either because that isn't enough for me. Rachel, you're a similar boat. I think you knew a little bit more about it than I did with this experience of it.
Yeah, I think I knew its reputation as a very influential show in queer spaces because of its representation.
Yeah, I kind of knew that only in terms of the Wachowskis made it. I didn't know that there was actual content within the show that actually reflected that.
I didn't know about the creators' backgrounds. I knew that a lot of the characters.
Yeah, which is cool, which is a definite selling point.
And I think I also came across it because, you know, a trans woman plays a trans woman.
What? And a black British lady plays a black American lady. So it was all representation. Yeah, I did not learn all about that stuff until way, way later. And again, we only watched this show relatively recently. I want to say, what, end of 2019?
Yeah.
Start of 2020, we watched it. Got kicked off to watch it because it kept being something that got brought up in the space of shows that you should have checked out when it came out. It got cancelled. That was something
it was
that...
like, if you haven't watched it, you're sleeping on Sense8. It's a great show.
But it got cancelled, but they got a TV movie to wrap it up, so it does end. And that was something that held me back, too, for quite some time, was it got cancelled.
And it didn't have an ending, and you particularly try and avoid shows that get cancelled without having a chance to end.
Yeah.
Because you just find that really frustrating.
Well, I've grown up with too many. And my soul still aches at the cancellation of shows like Space Above and Beyond, Firefly in a minor capacity. That one doesn't break my heart as much as other people. Reaper, that one breaks my heart still
Reaper
to this day.
Reaper will forever
be in our hearts. And, you know, I do not like engaging with shows that I know get cancelled, but every now and then I do. And especially if there's a big enough energy behind the fandom, if it has an interesting premise, usually a sci-fi genre will do that for me. If there's something to it, like a cast member perhaps, or a general idea.
If you already have some investment
that
you're like, well, even if it doesn't have an ending, I'll at least have this person and enjoy seeing them, or I trust the creators or whatever.
Did you know anyone in the show before watching the show? Like, did you know that Martha from Doctor Who was in this show?
Yes, I did. And I remember being very confused when I saw the ad because I was waiting for her to...
be British?
Kind of. I was waiting for her to be like... and that's the end of me doing an American accent because, you know, we know that I'm British.
Yes.
And I'm putting on this accent for this conversation in the trailer and then that's it.
Yeah, I don't think I really recognized because I think she wasn't really in much of the promotional material that I saw outside of pictures. And in the pictures, it's been quite a few years since Doctor Who. She's got these dreads. They're colorful. She looks... no offense to the Martha Jones character in Doctor Who, but she looked happy. And I don't associate Martha, the character, with the look of happiness as much as other companions.
I really liked Martha, so I looked up stuff that... I can't remember. Freema. I can't remember her last name.
Yeah, something like Ackman.
Freema had done since Doctor Who... and I was prompted to do that.
Law and Order UK. I remember she did that.
Yeah.
That short-lived show.
When she appeared in one of the specials, I think. I was like, oh, I wonder what she's up to now.
Yeah. So what got me hooked to definitely want to watch this show was we were doing our Babylon 5 rewatch. And it came to my attention that the writer and creator of Babylon 5, a show that we've given our thoughts on and love very much, was one of the creators and head writers of Sense8. It wasn't just the Wachowskis. JMS teaming up and
making another series that's sci-fi.
I didn't hear anyone talk about this in relation to JMS. Like I in a way, I kind of did, but I kind of didn't realize it. But, like, somehow I had missed the boat that JMS was attached to this in any way. I only heard Wachowskis, because they're the bigger pop culture icon names in the genre, I guess. But, you know, for people like me, JMS is a big name. JMS carries weight behind the credibility of the project. So once I knew that, and I knew a cast member or two, and I did hear it had an ending, and my sister said it was really good, she really liked it, I really jumped on board and was like, okay, Rachel, we need to watch this because we're watching Babylon 5. I was always curious, too, of what would JMS's writing be like for television in the modern-day context? Because in Babylon 5, he's writing a serialized story way ahead of the curve of when that was a popular thing. So now let's...
And he wasn't allowed to make it queer.
And he wasn't allowed to make it queer and explore some stuff that you can today. So that was very interesting too. Like, what is JMS like as a showrunner in the age of streaming and in the age of binge watch culture as well? Because as great as Babylon 5 is, Babylon 5 isn't necessarily what I would call a... Even though it's a serialized show, I wouldn't call it a binge serialized show, because there's stuff that doesn't get paid off until like 5 seasons later. And that doesn't necessarily line up with how binge-worthy television operates. Usually it's like payoff and setups within a season and or two. But these are like... He was always a long game player. And we see it in Sense8 that long game is still there. He hasn't let go of the long game.
No, and then that's part of what makes the movie frustrating, is that you know that certain things were meant to be spaced out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you could tell that there was a bigger plan involved for all of this. So that's our preamble into getting into and watching the show. Did you know the pitch of this? Like, I only knew action show. Did you know it was like 8 people around the globe are connected?
No, I didn't. And I didn't even know that it was sci-fi. I just thought that it was more of a, like...
drama.
Fly on the wall drama of these 8 people's lives and how they're more similar than they realize and they don't even know each other. And just the way that life mirrors each other.
Yeah.
Is what I thought.
Yeah, I could definitely see that, like that kind of 6 degrees, or in this case, 8 degrees of separation type of idea.
Yeah, like that's what I thought.
Which
that
it is in
was.
A sci-fi capacity, I guess.
Kind of. But not, it's not really.
Well, there are some people who have overlaps with other people, though.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like the rippling effect of
people. I wasn't
people.
Completely off base with my thought process, but that's not the main plot of the show.
No.
The side effect of the kind of thesis of what if there was this branch of humanity that had...
That they're basically mutants.
Telepathic connections?
Yeah. They're basically the... telepaths in Babylon 5 type of deal, in which how does one see a superior race be technically in amongst the normies, and obviously you use that to explore bigotry and in multitudes of ways, where there's racism, homophobia, sexism, all these type of things that we've seen the Wachowskis and we've seen JMS explore in their media many a times over. What did you think of this when we first started it? When we first started watching it, how did it go for you?
I was overwhelmed by the sex. That's what I remember now. Of just being like, do we need another sex scene? Do we need one? Like, I think I get the point.
Wow, you're such a prude.
They're queer. They like to fuck. I remember being really grossed out.
By the dildo?
By the...
rainbow dildo.
Slippery, wet dildo.
Yeah.
And then by the end of the show, when we see that dildo again, like, freshly used.
Set up and pay off, yeah.
I was excited to see the wet rainbow dildo, so I got past my prudishness, I guess.
See, for me, that was actually something I really appreciated about the show straight off the bat. Not because I'm a horny person or anything. It's more that I was like, you told me that there was a queer aspect to the show, and I was like, oh, okay. And I'm so used to, in a lot of these shows, Star Trek Discovery, where all the aspects of a relationship aren't actually on display, and that includes romance, sex, and passion and tenderness. It's always just, I love you, and the melodrama of, I'm going to lose you. Actually being able to see, not just because they're queer, but just characters who in relationships just have sex, and it's not done in a way that's just like pornographic or filling up time, but actually just demonstrates the bond between the two characters in the relationship
really
is something
does
unique.
Explore the way that physical intimacy, as well, like in the broadest sense, but also in a sexual context,
yeah,
can really bring people together. And it is a very specific way that you can express feelings mm-hmm. as well. Like, that comes across throughout the show. Yeah. And that the deepness and the passion that all of these characters have for their sexual partners really comes to fruition in those sex scenes.
Yeah. When I first started watching it, and maybe this will change because we've only watched this once. And so it's been about a year or so since we've watched it. So there are some details that are a bit foggy. I'm going to admit there are going to be some character names that I've forgotten the pronunciation of. It's been a little while. But I remember I was a bit turned off. And I still feel like this in this storyline of I genuinely did not like and I still do not care for the beginning setup of the previous woman who gave birth to all of these people.
Yeah.
And the, because in the end, it's not, it's explored, but not fully. And it's Robin Wright, I'm pretty sure, the actress. I'm forgetting if it's her or Daryl Hannah, but I'm pretty sure Robin Wright and the guy from Heroes
lift off like the other storylines do.
That mysterious backstory with her and the guy from Heroes, I'm pretty sure it's from Heroes, that those two. And that's the setup of the show and Whispers. I actually like Whispers, but like that whole backstory thing, something about it was just, it didn't connect with me. And that's what opened up the show. And it is a running thread throughout the show. And it's just a story beat that I never really cared for. I didn't care for those characters. Like, I didn't care for his character and I didn't care for what we got to know about her character all that much. I actually felt like every time we focused on the old school backstory, I was zoning out a bit because I was actually more invested in the current story. But it took me a little while to find my footing with the show because of that. And we follow what in the group of the eight people is the most boring one, which is the cop man. He's all right. Like, I don't mind the acting. His character gets better, but he's definitely the most, like, vanilla of the characters. He's the typical protagonist kind of man who has to find out that this is the case.
Yeah, it makes logical and thematic sense that he's our first touch point.
Yeah.
Because it is designed for American audiences and he's the main American surrogate character.
Yeah.
And because he's a police officer, it makes sense that he would investigate it.
Yeah, but as it went along, I got really invested in the show and I fell in love with the show. I will say that
I fell in love with the characters.
Oh, yeah, the characters, the show.
Not just
the writing.
The show, but the whole package. And I'm still really deeply and truly fond of definitely all of our main eight.
Yeah. But
as well as secondary characters that come in and are just amazing.
I love Felix. I was so, like, devastated when they shot the fuck out of him. Like, no, don't kill Felix.
No.
He's our good
my Felix. My
he's
Felix.
My good dumbass friend.
Yeah.
He's a good guy. He's just a bit of a dipshit. Don't kill him. Like, and
yeah.
I got into the show. I don't know how you feel, but I personally, at this moment in time, having only watched it once through, I found season one to be the better. I don't know, something about its atmosphere. There was a general, it had a good balance of like really dark, somber sadness and the goofy, upbeat nature. The second season, I kind of look at it more as a brighter show in a way, even though there's depressing stuff in it. The first season just has this cloud of darkness there. to me that I kind of appreciated a lot more.
And I feel like this is just maybe me looking back on it and putting this on the show when it isn't actually there. But I feel like season one had more clarity and purpose in a lot of things, whereas season two is frustrating because it still has those things.
Yeah.
But for the majority of the season, it's setting up longer plans. And because...
more mysteries.
Because they don't get to deal with those in the way that they originally planned. Mm-hmm. It's frustrating.
Yeah, yeah. And I just also... I look at it as the first season was the character building season. Like, you have to build up all these characters so then the adventures can happen. And... the adventures, don't get me wrong, season two's great. I love the second season as well, but the first season just did a really great job of making me care about each one of the characters. Well, the second season, there were some characters that I'm just like, you're good, you're good. Your first season set you up real nice, and you're still good, but, like, I didn't really care about the cop and the blonde-haired one who's... I know the actress's name is Tuppence, because that's a great name, but I'm forgetting her character's name off the top of my head, but...
Riley Blue.
Riley. Riley and Sam is the cop, I'm pretty sure. I found them a little less interesting in the second season, mainly, I guess it's that typical thing, right? Of...
Will.
Oh, Will.
Riley and Will.
Riley and Will. I thought it was Sam, but Will. Riley and Will, they're building up their relationship in the first season, and then the second season, they're on the run type of deal. And I guess I was more invested in seeing these two having a budding relationship and learning about each other's traumas and connecting and passing through that. And then obviously him going after them at the end for getting, you know, her and all that kind of stuff was more thrilling to me than the second season. It was like, and let's keep injecting you with drugs.
Well, we got to get you high to keep you safe.
Yeah, which was an interesting story beat.
Yeah, and an interesting idea. But for me, it kept on coming up as we need a roadblock, so Will needs drugs.
Yeah.
Or Will's drugs are wearing off. And it's like, yeah, I know you need this, but it's just being used so much. And then it gets used in an amazing way, and it's like, okay, well, now I don't mind so much because you used it to set up this moment, and this moment makes me really happy.
Since we're talking about the more negative or lesser aspects, which of our main eight is your least favorite, or one that you didn't get drawn into as much? Because my answer is actually a little bit more surprising than you may think it will be, but...
I don't think it's actually going to be Will.
No, because I pair him and Will and Riley together.
Then... is it Leader?
No, he's my favorite. What are you talking about? That's a fucking dream. I wish the show was called Leto. And every episode was about Leto and his whole crew, his whole polyamorous relationship. Mm-hmm. But who's you? Who's the one that you just didn't get with?
I think it's hard to say because for me, there's points in across the two seasons in the movie where all of the characters kind of drop into that bottom position.
They rotate around.
Yeah, they rotate around. But I think I'm going to go with Sun.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that. The first season, she's a little bit too on the bottom rungs. Like, she's awesome. She's a badass. Oh,
she's such an amazing character.
But once you finally get onto the...
who's my favorite?
Yeah.
She often just kind of falls under the radar.
She rose up the ranks once they actually got her the whole thing with her brother involved and also the cop guy. That was great. Me, it's...
When it's like in the movie, it's just like she took me home to meet her family and it's her dog.
Yeah.
So cute.
For me, oddly enough, looking back, the one that I don't know why, like I like the performance, I like the energy, but for some reason it just never drew me in is Cassius. Him, you know, that whole stuff. I like the characters. I like how his best friend's now, his mum's now dating the African warlord guy who's going to kill him.
Yeah.
That's all fun. And I like the whole running for politics. I like it. It's just, for some reason, maybe because of the cast switch up with him.
Yeah, but, that did hurt it.
And I didn't care for his group as much. Like, his friend and his mother. Like, they were all great, but they just, as side characters, I didn't find as fun to visit as Felix or as Bug or as, you know, like those. Yeah, yeah. So it's just the, he's my lesser one just because I find that, I don't know, he's a good 7 out of 10 throughout the whole entire show. And his story is, like, he's consistently at that rate. But I don't know, just something about that side of the story never drew me in as much as, weirdly enough, like, as much as a whole Will of Vanilla guy. I like the whole stuff with his dad. I like the whole stuff with Riley. I like the whole him going after Whispers by using the same tactic right back at him. He had more, he had a lot of agency, Will did, in his own plots, even though he's kind of a Vanilla Toast guy. But I already said it, my favorite's Leto. He's the best. He's the best.
I was baiting you into bringing
him. Is he yours or are you different? I know, it's hard not to say Wolfgang.
I was about to say Wolfgang.
Is it because Wolfgang's a great character or because you got to see his cock a lot? Because you got excited by the cock.
Both. I will freely admit that it is largely affected by both.
Yeah, Wolfgang's great. Wolfgang's great. I find mine's, my love for his story is a little bit colored by the TV, the end wrap-up movie, because that's the plot that suffers the most from the crunching down of seasons-long story. No fault of the actual characters or the actual acting.
No,
or even the writing. It's just really the nature of the beast.
And the storyline itself makes sense, but it needed
time
to be spread across more time.
It's like if Londo in Babylon 5 committed genocide, but then they have to wrap up the show with a movie and they just did his little redemption sad arc in one movie. He's like, no, 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 you need seasons, baby. Seasons.
Needs time to develop.
To bake. Did you find it weird that my favorite character is Leto? And
out of the 8.
Out of the 8. And all of his group. I love his boyfriend. I love
his girlfriend.
Her.
Yeah, you loved it every time it went back to Mexico City. You were like, yes!
The whole show, one of the joyous pitches is all of these people have unique talents and specialties and ideas, and he's an actor. And I always found it interesting that he, out of all of them, was the one that rarely benefited from anyone else's powers. Like, I think the one I remember the most is when Sun had to help him do the cocktail things for an audition or whatever it was. But he would help others. But I don't really, but I don't recollect as many coming into his stuff.
The speech.
Which speech?
That he gives at Pride.
Yeah.
And that's from all of them.
Yes, that's true. That's true. But, like, most of the time, his story is very isolated off. And you don't have as frequently the others coming in to do stuff to help him. He helps them a lot more. Like, out of the crew, I found that he was the one that was influenced the least by having the Sense8 ability.
Yeah.
He would help others with the acting stuff, but the speech and her helping with the cocktails and stuff, that's the stuff I remember the most, oddly enough, for him. I always remember, like, when I was watching, I was always noting, like, his story is kind of on its own a lot more than the rest. And I wonder if that's by design or if it's just his character doesn't need all these things all the time as much as the others, because his character's story is very different. It's a different show in a way. You know, his whole I'm the famous machismo actor man who's now been outed as a gay actor man in a culture and a country that rejects that, and my career dies from it, but will it be reborn in a new way? That doesn't really need the Sense8 ability, also because he's never threatened by having the Sense8 ability like every other character is. Yeah. Every other character has someone who could get them or go after them or discover the Sense8 ability. His threat is, my agent dropped me. And so, like, What do you do with the ability that you, one of your people is a hacker for him, you know? Which I find interesting. What about Leto worked for you as a character? Because he's also one of your favorites.
I think I really enjoyed the way that they respected the Mexican culture while also
critiquing it
in a way that for me never felt preachy. It always felt deeply personal and grounded.
Yeah, that's true. For me, I just loved his relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was a really well done way of showing a hidden relationship, because they have problems in their relationship that isn't just from I'm your secret lover. There's other problems that just relationships have.
Yes.
And it's not just
But this one thing.
If you came out, then everything would be better for all of us. No, it's like his partner too, although he does want him to come out, you know, obviously he does, but like he also recognizes wholeheartedly, like, if you came out, this will ruin everything. It's not as if
we would lose the life that we have together.
And would be ostracized beyond belief. In a way that your fame has kind of trapped us in what we are at the moment. But like I thought that was really well portrayed. I didn't feel like that was the only thing about their characters. There was so much other stuff going on. It wasn't just, and now we cut to the secret gay lover story, you know, where will the press see them? Oh no, it wasn't that. There was stuff going on with his acting work. There was actually stuff going on with the relationship outside of that, with also the addition of the third member of their relationship, which was great. A love. That's something too I really appreciate about Leto's relationship story is I've never really seen a story in a show actually explore polyamorous relationships and an actual polyamorous relationship, not just, oh, I like to fuck on the side and you're cool with that. Like
the open, it's not just an open relationship. It is specific.
A triad.
Like, yeah, a triad. And their relationship is with each other and they're not looking for anything outside and they have kind of those rules set up around that stuff as well.
Yeah, I've never seen that, really.
No.
And it was very informative without being lecturing.
No, and it also a part of that is that it's like, they make it very clear that this is just one way to do this.
Yeah.
Because a very strong theme in Sense8 is that there is no one way to love and no one way to be loved.
Yeah.
That is right or more valuable than others.
Yeah.
It really does have that kind of overall messaging in lots of different ways that love is love.
Yeah, yeah, and I can't speak for the Wachowskis as I'm not a big fan of their previous works and I don't know their ideologies or their motifs as well as others, but JMS, that's something I really feel with JMS when it comes to that story and the acting and the culture part, as well as with Wolfgang and, you know, his love story, where, you know, the woman is, like, getting in an arranged marriage, where in terms of, you go back to Babylon 5, JMS is an atheist, but he rewrites stories about cultures and religions and stuff that he himself does not believe in, but he does it with such an amount of understanding and respect, whilst also still looking at it with a critical lens. And I bring this up because when you watch Babylon 5, one of the little microbes in that show that you see grow into something fully formed here, and I'm sure the Wachowskis have an interest in this too, but I can't help but refer to JMS, is arranged marriage.
Yeah.
In Babylon 5, it's just a minor little footnote that the Centauri have arranged marriages, and it's like, do you marry for an arrangement? Is it for love? What is all of this? Oh yeah, and the Psi-Corps too, but that's in a different sense.
Yes, but it's the same kind of thing of not getting to choose who you love and who you spend your life with, because the Psi-Corps does marriages based on genetic testing.
Yes.
Centauri, it's about social class.
Which is what's similar here with her story, right? In which they're marrying up.
So these are RIDs that JMS has explored before, but not in a way where he really got to go as deep or nuanced as perhaps he wanted to, because of the limitations that were forced on him by the standards and the expectations.
Or maybe his own interest. Maybe his own interest. Yeah. Maybe back in the 1990s, he had the arranged marriage stuff be there as just kind of a window dressing set piece kind of stuff for a character's cultural background. But in this show, it is a major pivotal point, and it doesn't just do the typical Western thing of arranged marriage is bad and scary and evil and we don't like it and it's bizarre and foreign to us. Mm-hmm. It actually explores the nuances of it. It explores the fact that love can be found within that structure.
And how modern people experience arranged marriages.
Yes.
Because often
the generational difference.
It's just like, oh, how can that even happen in 2021?
Oh, back then, 2015, right?
But
yeah, I think it's an interesting thing that, you know, one of the writers has had this idea, this real life thing be just a microbe in a previous piece of work, and now it is like a massive thing that has fully come to life and something
seed that has sprouted.
Yeah, and I found that to be one of the most fascinating aspects of the show, because it was done in a way where it wasn't criticizing arranged marriages, but it was critiquing it. It was looking at it and saying, look at this small story within it. But she did have a genuine love for the guy that she was going to marry, but he was a bit of a mysterious figure in his own right. Is he shady? Is he not? The families all seem to kind of get along, but also she's in love with Wolfgang, which is one of the other Sensate characters who I enjoy. Wolfgang as a character, he's fine. I think I enjoy the stuff that happens to Wolfgang more than Wolfgang himself as a character. Like, he's got a pretty cool, fucked up backstory. He's got a mean daddy, a cool best friend that's like a brother, some weird Italian lady that's trying to hunt him down later on in the second season when he meets another Sensate person who has her own group, right? That was fun. The fact that they introduced that there are others out there was an interesting idea, because in the beginning it just kind of felt like there was only so few of them, but then the second season opened the doorway that, no, there's lots of them.
Yeah. And the trade-off that her group kind of makes of, we will turn others in so you leave us alone.
Yeah, the the traitors.
Mm-hmm.
That was an interesting idea. One of the characters that I think is an interesting one as well is we've got to talk about Whispers, the central villain of this show. He's kind of a non-character for a very long time. He's just man. Mean man.
Evil man.
Evil man.
Evil bearded man.
And that's, you know, I would say he's one of the characters that does suffer from the mystery box aspect of the show. Of like, let's draw these mysterious things out. But he suffers a lot too from the show getting cancelled and them having to crunch it down, because he actually got a character near the end of the first season, and in the second season he had a character. We found out a lot about him. The actor got to display his personality a lot clearer than what he used to be able to, because we're trying to keep him under wraps. Limitations
were taken away.
Yeah, and we got to just see him act. Like, that guy's a great actor, and this is a credit again to the Wachowskis, to the crew, to the casting. That guy's a great actor. I love the sci-fi cult nature of him as an actor, because he is the handsome bounty hunter man from the Critters movies. So it has, you know, this show has the sci-fi cred of not just JMS and the Wachowskis, but some of the casting along the way. You have these people like Sylvester McCoy. The Doctor himself is here. And those are always things that are always great. You saw this in B5 a lot too, right? Where you had a lot of big sci-fi hitters, whether it be behind the scenes or in the show, turn up and give us something that we want from them. Sylvester McCoy was great in Sense8. He was
wonderful. Such a little darling.
Yeah, I love Sylvester McCoy. He's one of my favorite doctors, and it was nice to see him here just being Sylvester McCoy. I mean, he's acting, but the line between him just saying lines as himself and being a character is really, really faint. And I mean that in the most beautiful of ways. Sylvester McCoy is like a kooky, weird, cool guy. So just having him be himself basically in a show like this is gold in its own right.
It feels blended. It doesn't feel like he's being lazy and just being himself. But it feels like the character has been blended with his traits.
Oh, I'm going to do my accent. I'm not changing that.
No, and it,
so every time I say the archipelago in my thick accent, it sounds great.
Oh, so great. So satisfying.
Yeah, it is. We've talked about in our Star Trek Discovery discussions, we've talked about in previous episodes of our thoughts on how if you want a good queer story, a good show that actually explores LGBTQ+ themes and characters and issues, whilst also still not just being that only, Sense8 is a great place to go because it actually has the fucking content here. This isn't Hannibal, where it's teasing you that gay stuff could happen. This isn't Discovery, in which, yeah, they're gay, but we're not going to let them have any screen time and or be in healthy, happy relationships.
No.
This show actually does that whilst also still maintaining a story and the characters, and not just being this show is nothing but the gay drama show that some of these do fall into, right? When you hear,
we're not looking for the L word.
I'm not looking for queer as folk, right? Where that's
that's just not what we're looking for. So it's just kind of,
and it's a very tired kind of area of the LGBTQ stories. There's more stories you can tell than just the we have suffered because of our sexuality. You can have them be in kooky sci-fi stories like this, for fuck's sake, you know? Like, have your cool trans woman be in an action sequence. Awesome.
Ryan, it's like queer people are just people. So queer characters can just be characters?
Yeah, I mean,
it's a really wild concept that not many people seem to fully understand at this stage.
And they do a great job in this show, and I keep saying great because there's so many things done well, of, for someone like myself, you know, I'm just like an average guy. I don't know all the ins and outs of the what are these things in the LGBTQ+ community. Like, I don't know these terms, I don't know this term. If you're throwing some of these things in a narrative that aren't really exploring narratives that much, like, for instance, in Star Trek Discovery, non-binary character being introduced, I haven't seen many of those in a narrative before. So, you know, the basic give the audience a crash course of what these things are is done very well in Sense8, because it doesn't feel like you're talking down to the audience by saying, these are my pronouns, this is this. I just get it. I'm watching the show and I'm like, okay, Nomi's trans and she's in a relationship with Martha Jones, and like on and on it goes. I don't need, like, they explain it, they talk about it, but it's not pandering, and it doesn't feel like we've got to explain this for the straights, but we also are doing, you know what I'm talking about?
Okay, so I do want to talk a little bit more about Nomi, if that's the...
Yeah.
You don't mind me taking the leading the conversation in this way. And I just want to say, it's really refreshing that you have a trans character and it's not about them being trans and it's not about them dealing with their identity. With, well, like Nomi's stuff about being trans, the majority of it is around other people not accepting
her. Oh, yes,
her,
yes, yes.
And judging her and questioning her.
You mean her family?
Mainly her family. But a scene that really sticks out in my mind is the flashback to the pride that they go together, like Nomi and her girlfriend.
Martha Jones.
Yeah. I can't remember her character's name right now.
Yeah.
Anyway, they go to Pride, and then one of, like, the Martha Jones's friends,
right,
attacks Nomi for a blog post that she made.
Right.
And attacks the fact that she's trans.
In a gay space.
In a gay space, and that she wouldn't understand things from their perspective.
They don't understand that struggle.
And, like, you don't know how long we've fought to be able to be called this.
Mm.
And totally missing the point that Nomi was putting forward and that she explained.
Mm.
We are very much on the side of Nomi in that situation.
Yeah, and Nomi's just a fully formed character. Nomi isn't just the trans character who...
finding who she is.
She's not a tragedy character.
No.
Which she could easily have fallen into. Oh, and here's something important. Here's something important to mention. I know it's very funny, but I have to mention this because I want to reiterate, at the moment we are a Star Trek Discovery podcast, but this is very important. She's alive.
Yeah.
It's not like she's a ghost throughout the whole fucking show that comes in and out. She's an actual character that's alive.
She
and gets to serve a purpose.
She isn't given a sacrifice.
And she has characters outside of her.
She doesn't die and come back to life. Well, she does have her e-death.
Yes, but she gets...
no physical death.
She gets to have a character outside of her skill set. Yes, she's the hacker lady, but she's more than just the hacker lady. You know what I'm talking about? She's not like Adira in Star Trek Discovery, in which all I can say is they're a tween genius engineer person, and that's it. That's all I can say about Adira. While in this, it's like Nomi is a funny person who's a bit of a badass, mm-hmm. bit of a loser sometimes too, in a healthy relationship. I love their relationship. See, this is a show in which I actually look forward to characters in their relationships. There are so many shows. Hannibal was one of them where I'm just like, oh, fuck off with all this relationship drama bullshit. This was a show in which I was genuinely concerned about their relationships, whether or not they were going to fall apart, and not because they, not with Nomi, didn't have a trouble necessarily within their relationship because of each other, but because of the plot line happening of the government conspiracy and the family stepping in and all of that stuff. Yeah, all of that stuff was what was tearing their relationship apart, not any drama going on between them that could have been so easily done. You know what's something I also really appreciate? I love how one's in relationships with normal people. The normal people know their partner well enough to know that they're not crazy.
Yeah, we...
Oh, fuck, that was juicy stuff.
That was so good.
Because that could have been the whole show.
We mean non-sensate people.
Yeah, the normies.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, oh my God, that was so delicious because...
The the Homo sapiens rather than the...
What are they?
The Sensates? I can't remember. They have a real big proper name. But don't you agree? Because
yes.
I could have bogged down this whole show
yes,
of like...
could have been
Leo,
so
I'm breaking up with you because you're
drama.
Crazy.
And they don't milk it. Instead, they make strong characters and strong relationships.
They're not making straw mans out of the other people around their lives. You know what I'm saying? Like, it could have been so easy. So easy.
So easy.
For one of their partners
the
or their friends or whatever just to completely disown them.
Simpler way, and then they become isolated and victimized. And they begin to question themselves and
that sort of shit.
But that's not what they do, and it's so much more interesting for it.
And because of Sense8 ability, right, this whole show is about community, about family, about connecting. And it's not because, and it's not just our eight physically connecting with one another, but each one of our characters... connecting with a larger community around them. We see this with Nomi with connecting. Yeah, we see Nomi connecting with someone like Bug. Mm-hmm. We see obviously with the African guy, he becomes like a hero of his entire city, in which he's got the respect of a former enemy and now is running for politics. I mean, to that extent, we see Sun, you know, she gets the respect and camaraderie of fellow prisoners and then eventually of that police officer guy. And it's about these people finding not just connections with the other Sense8 people, but with the people around them in their everyday life or people that they encounter and actually forming bonds with them that actually feel that they were well made and earned. And you feel happy that these people are connecting with people outside of the eights, because that's kind of what happened. That's kind of what went wrong with the first one that they were born from, was they eventually isolated themselves off in that little cabin in the woods and it got all weird and people got killed and it was all fucked up and nonsense.
Yeah. And it's really interesting and it's so satisfying the way that everybody either creates or builds or rebuilds connections that were missing. Like, Nomi was really satisfied in her relationship with Annalie? Is that how you say it?
I can't remember how to pronounce it, but yeah.
And that gives her a lot of joy. But she does regret that she doesn't have a close relationship with her parents, but she's not willing.
Or a sister, right? Because her sister's almost there and wants invited to the wedding. And...
yeah, and like, because she's unwilling to change herself. Mm. And then she's ends up being rewarded, for lack of kind of a better phrase, for sticking that out and being true to herself, because then her parents actually come around and realize how much better off they are if they accept their daughter for who she is.
Yeah, and
it's the same with all of them. Like, all of them do it because Son is distraught at not having a family, so she's at the point at the end of the series where she's about to build a family for herself.
Well, yeah, I mean,
as well as having the family of her Sense8.
Because her brother's evil.
Her brother's evil.
I did like, again, there's so many moments, and this is, now I put this down to JMS again, because we see this in his work a few other times as well, like with B5. In a typical show, there are these landmines that would be stepped on for the drama's sake of it. For instance, Leto coming out to his mother. Oh my god, could you imagine in another show's hands how much of a fucking drag
so
that would have been?
Good.
In this
so
show,
good the way that they
in,
do that.
In this show, they sidestep that landmine, right? And we see that done in B5 as well. And
again, it's more interesting for it.
Yeah, or with Sun in prison, right, with her dad and that whole situation, how she had to stand there to save the brother and all that. And then you see the dad, even though he was a bit of a prick and a bit of a bad guy, he was going to be a good guy, then got murdered by the evil brother, who, again, like, the drama there would have just been, oh, the dad was evil too and nothing else, mm-hmm. right? Like, he wasn't a great guy, but they did give you more of a nuance to him than you could have, and that is great stuff. I mean, I will always bring up Sense8 as a great show in terms of its interesting science fiction, great character work, it's funny. That's just something we haven't talked about. It's really funny.
It is truly a drama.
Yeah.
Because it has low lows and high highs and everything in between. And you are taken on that journey with these characters. And it manages it so well because it isn't necessarily that, like, you're ping-ponging from lows to highs, depending on what characters you're doing. But the show orchestrates the scenes and the settings so that you're guided through these experiences and alongside these characters.
Yeah.
And it's that weird thing of, like, the ending is the ending that it needs to be.
But it's just crunched.
It's just crunched so much. So you want more, but you want more in the middle. You don't want more after.
Yeah, it's not like I want more stuff. It's just I want this stuff spread out to be more.
Yeah.
Like, I can't think of anything else I wanted to be stuffed in there. It's more like I just want all of these things to have been 45-minute things of their own, right? Yeah. That's it. Like, one of the things I really wanted to say is, I know we keep referring back to Jake.
Yeah, but then wouldn't that make it like Arrested Development Season 4?
No, that was a different beast. But I know we keep referring back to JMS because we're big B5 fans, but that is one of the things that we were drawn into the show.
Yep.
I don't know much about JMS the man. We do have his biography, autobiography. We will check it out. But
and
I've always found it.
Our thoughts on that.
I've always found it interesting that you know, a guy who I'm pretty sure grew up in a somewhat religious environment, who's a white of Polish descent, white guy, even back in the 1990s, wanted to explore like queer themes, but obviously could not fully explore it because of the times and what he was doing on television. I don't know what. Like, I don't know where that comes from him. Like, I'm not, like, I'm curious because he gets to fully explore it here. And obviously, the Wachowskis have a big influence in that too. But it's not like he hasn't had an interest in it before.
Part of the narrative around queerness is only people want to watch queer shows and only queer writers want to write queer characters.
Yeah.
And he's, as to our knowledge, not playing part of that. He's just a writer who treats queer characters like they're just characters and they can be part of the world that he's creating and to make space for that.
Yeah, I guess I look at this from just a very small corner of the sci-fi. I look at it from a sci-fi world perspective. I'm just not used to what I know to be a straight white writer man in sci-fi actually wanting to explore queer ideas in their sci-fi shows. Like, back in the 1990s, he obviously couldn't get to do it, but he was still trying to push it. But if it wasn't for some behind-the-scenes issues and obviously the censors. But this is like a, you know, like, you could say there's multitude of things that could go against him with this, like whether or not he can handle it well, whether or not, or maybe, well, obviously he's worked with the Wachowskis with this one, so this one doesn't necessarily hinder it as much, but it was better to have queer voices telling queer stories, and that kind of argument is there. But I just find it interesting that this is something he's been very interested in telling in a story since Babylon 5, and he actually got to do it. And hey, teaming up with the Wachowskis was also a great idea. Like, I can see the overlap here, but it's also good. You do have people who have been doing it themselves. I mean, one of their first movies, Bound, is a lesbian thief movie, right? So they've been on the ball for the beginning of their career as well. So I just find that kind of cool. Like, I like seeing him fulfill the thing he didn't get to back in the day. Because as fans of B5, we know about Talia and Ivanova, and we know that it didn't get to happen.
No!
So, hey, he got it somewhat here, so there you go.
He got to do representation in a sci-fi show.
Yeah.
It wasn't when he originally wanted to do it, and it still wasn't a network show, but he got to do it.
Yeah.
And it's so important that he did, and it's so fantastic that this show is as good as it is, and not just because of that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I
like, that's just one part of the show. And it adds to the overall themes and the complications and the layers of the characters. But it doesn't become what defines any of them.
Yeah.
Because, like, it makes sense when I think it was the Wachowskis or JMS said that all of the Sense 8 group that we see are all pansexual.
Yeah, something like that.
And it's just like, well, yeah, that makes sense for those people. Like, they don't say that because none of them really have that as a distinct part of their identity. None of them feel the need to say that, and it's like that's a side effect.
That's what I was gonna say. We cover a show with Discovery in the title, but this show actually fucking knows how to explore that word, because this is a show about them. This is a show about Discovery as well. Like, these are characters discovering not just superhuman abilities about themselves, but their own identities, of course. And
how their identities can shift.
Yeah.
And realizing what is truly important to them and to who they are as people. Like, if you can take away all of these things, would I still be me? If you added this fundamental change, who am I now? Am I still me? Am I a new me?
Are you know me? Yeah. The ending. I'm going to ask you this. Who are the characters that suffered the most from the crunch?
Kayla.
And Wolfgang?
Wolfgang and Kayla's husband, Raj, something
like that. Right. They're the biggest ones.
I feel like that's
you know who else suffered?
Sure, that's
you know
a sexual name.
You know who else suffered? Leto. Cuz his whole thing was he was going to go to Hollywood.
Now he's successful.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I guess.
He was getting ready to be successful. He was like getting ready to do the thing, and then he had to do the plot.
Yeah,
a large portion of his stuff was he'd done the audition, but now he was learning the script, right? I think that was the thing. Yeah. It's been a little while since we watched the ending, but shout out to Andy Dick. He was great. I want to see if the show went
Andy
on longer.
Dick.
I would have loved to have seen more of Andy Dick. He was actually really good. I really enjoyed him. Loved you in Star Trek Voyager. Loved you in this. Good job, Andy Dick. Yeah, Wolfgang and that whole love story, it made no sense
crunch. Like, all of a sudden, he's just, the husband's just okay with it.
Yeah, and because much as the Sense 8s can be all pansexual or whatever, I never got the idea that this guy was even remotely, the idea that this guy was open enough to want to have an open relationship. Mm-hmm. Like he was still, like, getting down with the fact that they just got fucking married. That one suffered from the crunch. You could see that it could have got to that ending, but it needed to actually have a story to get there.
We keep on going back to that. So many of these ideas that were crammed into that movie are so good, and there's so many interesting things that you know that they would have done with it too, because they've built up enough cred. So you know that they aren't going to go for those easy kind of landmine earthquake moments.
Oh, yeah, but you know who else suffered? Whispers. Fuck.
Oh, yeah.
He revealed what his big plan was, and it was just like immortality? Okay.
Woo! And it's just so default.
Well, it could have been explored so much better.
It's like, well, he doesn't want world domination, so I guess he wants to live forever. And it's like, oh, wait, it's actually that? Shit.
And it could have been explored really well, because when you break things down like that, it can be as trite. Say, again, think about back to JMS with Babylon 5. What do the shadows want? Chaos. But there's so much more to it.
What do the Fallen want?
Order. But there's so much more to it, because there was so much time and repercussions and stuff given it to it.
The layers of depth were able to be created slowly, a little bit at a time.
Yeah, and with Whispers, he's just bad guy, and then he gets blown up with a rocket launcher, and it was so pathetic. It was so pathetic. Such a pathetic death. Like, I know that people will fist pump and be like, yes, that motherfucker got it in the end, but to me, it was a very lackluster ending to a sinister character, and it was just done like, well, we have to. It felt like an obligation, because if you can't, you can't end it. Because this is them ending it, right? Like, there's no chance that this is going to come back. At least that's what they thought at the time. Maybe that will change, but at that moment, this is our shot. You can't have it with the villain not getting their comeuppance. And what's a great comeuppance? A fucking rocket to the face will do it. I mean, it worked for the cigarette-smoking man in X-Files, except for he came back for some reason. Don't even get me started with the X-Files. You know, it's fine, but it's a lackluster ending for him. And that really is important, because the whole show had this big, overbearing menace of Whispers affecting all of our characters, and him affecting them made them join together even more.
I really wonder how much that ending is going to affect our enjoyment on the rewatch. Because he's not going to feel nearly as menacing.
Knowing that Jesus is a rocket to the face?
Yeah.
I mean, I still will love to watch the cat and mouse game of the black pill things.
Yeah.
And when he forgot to take his, and then Sam showed up, Will showed up, and he's like, hey, I actually see where you are. I know where you are. Boom, 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 boom. And he freaks out. The best moment of all of this is when, of them using each other's powers or using those powers, is when Whispers walks into that little interrogation room. He always had the conversations with Will. And then he's talking to Will, and then Will physically grabs him and smacks his head, because he's literally in the room. It's projection anymore. I'm actually here, bitch.
So fucking great.
It was great. That was the best moment of the whole show to me.
Such a pure joy and satisfaction. Thinking about that moment brings such a grin to my face.
Yeah, that's one where when they wrote that into the script, I would have finished for the day, because that is the best moment of the entire show to me. Because, look, as cool as it's like Sun using her powers to do the karate whilst being the trans woman and all that kind of stuff, or like Leto acting for this person, or the driving of this.
Nomi and Bug hacking into the system.
I think just Will physically being in the room.
Riley DJing.
Will just physically being in the room and just smacking his head. That was great.
Perfect.
Just punching him, just going at him. It was wonderful stuff.
And it was so satisfying, because you've seen it so many times.
Yeah.
Felt the frustration of Will so deeply, and the smugness of Whispers, and like all you wanted to do was reach in and like punch Whispers in the face, and then Will does the equivalent of that, but even more satisfying.
It was done. It's done really well, because Whispers had invaded all of their personal spaces, and this was when they started to invade his. They started to watch him. They started to look at him and find out he had a wife and a kid and all this kind of crazy stuff, and they were doing it to him. And this little interrogation room was a part of his routine. He had his little routine, Whispers, And then they physically invaded his routine, which is different to them invading his life before, because now he's actually physically there and he's like, hey, motherfucker, I'm in your routine now and I'm going to fuck you up good. And it was, see, that's a better comeuppance than a rocket to the face. See, the simple thing
it's
of that
personal
happening.
Personal and so specific to whispers.
And is a great joke for the audience because we're so used to how we are presented there in the room now.
So
like the camera
satisfying.
Just moves over and they're like, hello, I'm here too. And it's like, oh, hello. And it was doing it the exact same way we were trained to
yes.
recognize how that was the method that they would demonstrate this power. But then it was like, no. He's actually there. Oh. So good.
Table turned metaphorically. He didn't even need to flip the table.
If the show somehow got renewed and got to come back.
And it was about R8.
Yeah, of course. I'm saying if it continued
yes.
on somehow. If,
yeah.
if it got to come back and we got to follow these characters again, would it work? Would you watch it?
I don't know. I think I would give it a shot for sure, but I would be prepared for disappointment.
You see, I'm a cynical bastard.
You don't like Crusades.
I don't like Crusade, no. I would say the only way they would make it work for me, and this is a bold statement because many people love it, I did too, but if you erase that movie, if that movie didn't exist, it's a brutal thing to do because all of our characters end on a really happy note. But to me, there's
that.
Just too many.
I want before the movie.
But then that doesn't work. You know,
yeah,
it just doesn't
it's
work.
It's been too long now. It's been too long.
To me, the only way I would really. Hey, they'll figure it out. Maybe they'll do it a 10 years later story and there's a new thing that they have to overcome. But to me, You wipe that movie off the board and you do what you was going to do in a series instead. But I don't know if I would watch it. I just don't. I think it's been. You can't go home again.
Yeah. Yes, that's exactly right.
They would have to be really smart about it.
Yeah, that's it.
And as much as I love JMS, I don't think he has that capacity as a writer, and nor do the Wachowskis, because we can see this in their work. Every time JMS has revisited Babylon 5 after the series was completed, it's just worse. It's never good. It was never better. It's never great like the series was, because he had a clear defined vision and he ended it. But he wants to come back every now and then, and it's never good. It's never the thing. Not just because, oh, I grew up with it, and then I saw. No, I watched all of these. I consumed all the B5 media at the same time. There's a clear distinction between the quality of when he did the show and when he did the stuff after. The Wachowskis should have left it at that first Matrix, but they couldn't. They had to revisit it, and it was worse. So I don't think these creators could successfully go back home again, because it's been proven that they can't already. I would say that I would really want to rewatch Sense8 again. I think it needs.
It's a yum yum.
Yeah, it's a yum yum. It's a show that I think needs a rewatch from us, but not anytime soon. Because I think
no space. Space is needed.
Yeah,
space and time.
Space and time. A bit of space and time from
exactly
it is needed.
Exactly what the plot of the movie needed.
Oh, it needed space and time. Ooh. Like
that's
a time travel story in space. The doctor shows up and he's like, Martha, you got dreadlocks.
With a spaceship diner?
Of course. Oh, no. That was after. You see, you're going to have it be the Tenant on his farewell tour.
Lesbian undertones the diner. That's why I brought it up.
I'm so dumb. Why would the doctor say you got dreads now when Martha had dreads the last time you saw her for no fucking reason?
No fucking reason.
No. What he would say is, what happened to Mickey? That's a great question. That's a great question, Doctor. That's a bigger question than your fucking name, Doctor, is what happened to Mickey? That's a deep cut for you Doctor Who fans out there listening. Whatever happened to Mickey?